Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Between Realities. It's a pleasure to have you here with us today. My name is Alex. I'm joined here by my co-host, Skiva. How are you, Skiva?
I'm pretty good, dude.
Skiva's hanging on by a thread.
I am. I got injured, and I can't tell you why yet. I'll tell you next week.
But he's going to tell you next week. But
yeah, so I could pull my back out, and so I'm hanging on by a thread, but we're going to get through this today.
We are. We are. The show must go on, the old adage.
Not only are we going to get through it, but it's going to be an awesome time.
It is going to be extremely awesome. Let's say hi to those who have joined us early in the chat today. Sweaty Nugget, JJ, the homie, always here. Thank you for being here, Sweaty Nuggies. Paradise Decay, the legend. Limitless Gaming, another one of our best supporters. Thank you, Limitless, so much. Dinah Gwen, the VR poet extraordinaire. Check her out on YouTube. She does VR poetry in alt space, actually. It's pretty cool. We've got Tones My Bones. He is a fan of our guest who we have today, which we'll get to in just a second. Hussein X, who's always here as well, and in every other VR podcast chat in the world. He is like the ultimate VR podcast fan, and we are so happy to have him here. Your pal VR is joining us for the first time.
Nice.
Live, anyway. I know he's called the show before, so it's great to have you live here, man. Danny Hunkley. Always here, dude. Mr. Trinidad. Rebecca Evans, thank you for joining us live. I'm glad to see you here. My Facebook friend, Rebecca Evans. And Mateo 311, the dude. He always gets in right before we cut this off. You know, like he's like, hey, wait a second, what about me? Hold on. Okay. We got you, Mateo. Don't worry. We're not going to forget about you. So on today's show, we have a legend from season one of Between Realities. She is a VR philosopher and VR architect and is super, super, super smart. And she actually, her video is the most watched on our channel.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, you're obviously missing something because we are super, super excited to welcome back to the show, Miss Andrea Ion Kojikoru. Hello, m'lady.
How you doing? Awesome.
You know, we feel exactly the same way. And like you, like you and Kent and a couple of the other guests that we had who like really enabled us to have some of those like deeper philosophical discussions that we love to have, in my opinion, really helped kind of shape what this podcast is, you know? And at this point, I'm sorry, but you're kind of a staple here. And I hope you know you're going to be coming back pretty much every season because we're just too excited to have you and we're not going to let you go.
All right, awesome.
All right, so we don't have good audio from Andrea right now.
Probably
the same thing that happened last time.
Yes, okay. Andrea, go ahead and talk again now.
Is it better?
Yes, that was my bad. I had Andrea muted.
Yep.
My bad.
We've been bouncing back and forth between realities and different spaceships, and, you know, we missed a little thing here or there. So. Anyway, by the way, she said she had found her home, all right? I don't know if you guys might have missed that, but she said she had found her home here on Between Realities Spaceship, and we couldn't be more proud to hear that.
All right. Let's see. I'm just going to confirm that we have the sound working perfect.
Okay,
good now. Awesome. All right, so yeah, we can continue on.
Andrea, you know, we say you're a VR philosopher and a VR architect, you know, but to somebody who has not met you from our first episode, can you explain a little bit about what that even means?
Sure. So I'm not actually, I never describe myself as a VR philosopher, but I love it when other people do. So I'll start with the architect part because that's a bit easier to explain. I'm actually an architect, like I'm a licensed architect, and I worked for 10 years as an architect and then a project manager in architecture. And then something happened, which is what probably similar story to what happened with all of us. I met VR. And 4 weeks later, I quit my job to become a VR developer.
Wow, that's
and,
cool.
I've always loved philosophy. I've been reading philosophy since I was like super, super young, like 11 years old. For some reason, I just love having my brains twisted. I found that all the stuff that had accumulated in my head in terms of theories about life and the world that I had been reading are actually very useful in trying to understand VR, because although I'm dealing with it every day, it's still kind of like a completely new territory for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's a new, my computer died. It's a new territory for everyone, you know, like VR is kind of like a new frontier, you know, and I feel privileged that we are among some of what I would still consider the early adopters to the technology, because there's a lot of people out there who have tried it, who didn't have their mind blown by it. So I'll plug it in here in a second. Thank you. But they just like, they obviously are missing something. You know what I mean? So what is it about VR that you think, like, why is it that VR has a spot at the table in these kinds of conversations, in your opinion?
In general or just for me? Like,
just for you, you know. Or in general, both.
Well, I actually never thought about it in such a straightforward kind of way. Actually, the first answer, I think it's like I fell in love, basically. Like, I don't think it was like a rational thing, because basically I spend my whole life working my way at some point up the ladder in corporate America, you know, become like being an architect and trying to build up a career in architecture. And then I was running this huge construction project in Prague, actually. And I just randomly got invited to check out VR, like just several years ago. And honestly, I was just smitten. I was like, holy shit, this is like the biggest, most amazing thing I have seen in my life. And I can't imagine life from now on without doing this every day. So I literally quit my job in architecture.
That's amazing.
So ask me this again in a few more years, I'm still figuring out what exactly happened to me. But basically, I was even afraid to tell people what I had done, you know, for a while. I was secretly locked up in my apartment learning Unity.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to justify quitting architecture, which is like a job that people lie about having. You know, like, I'm an architect, actually. You know what I mean? Like, nobody lies about being a VR developer, you know? Like, yeah. It's, I mean, I guess you lied about not doing it. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I'm still doing architecture, and like, that's kind of maybe a topic for later in terms of like what I'm trying to combine the two things, basically.
Nice.
Maybe to attempt to answer your question, I think there's something that's kind of maybe some realization that's happening, because let's do some psychotherapy tonight. So basically, there was something when I was in architecture school that always really, really bugged me. It was kind of the elephant in the room for me. And that was the fact that we always talk about architecture in terms of drawings and images. And we make, like, when I had my exams, the professor would look at the plans and make comments like, oh, the plan is so beautiful. It looks so nice here. So they were actually appreciating, like, the graphic quality of the plan. And in my mind, I was like, dude, that's, like, irrelevant. It should be about how that space feels like, not how pretty that I've drawn that corner. But that's kind of, and if you read any kind of architectural theory book about stuff like that, I mean, that's kind of the stuff that people talk about. I mean, we're still obsessed with how beautiful a two-dimensional plan from like 100 years ago looks like. But then we didn't really have any tools at the time to go inside the building. I mean, you know, the idea is that you look at a 2D plan and you kind of like imagine the building, or you look at the rendering, but then like we all know we fake renderings, like, mm-hmm. like we showed like the one angle that's amazing in a building that has a million angles that are bad. So it was kind of like I was just super frustrated with this, but I could never put my finger on it. And when I got into VR, I was like, holy shit, like, now we can actually be in a building and be in a space and stop spending time in architecture dealing with things that no one actually cares about. So, I mean, that's not exactly what I thought in the beginning. In the beginning, I really felt like the floor had been swept, like, behind me or below my feet. But that's, I guess, after that, I kind of start thinking about it, and things like this started to come out.
You know, that's interesting because, I mean, if I'm gathering this correctly, so it's like you go in there and the people were just like, they're just like, whoa, this is cool. And they're almost like attached to like the emulation of like what would normally be already available, rather than thinking about like the implications of like actually existing in that space.
Yes, yes, yes. So like when you can't, you have to, when you have a building in your mind, right? You can't, the only way to communicate that building normally is to 2D drawings or a 3D model or some kind of abstraction. Like you can't actually be in there until it's done. But you know, if you have 20 million bucks to spend on it just to check out what it looks like, it feels like, I mean, we can't test that. And actually we couldn't test that until we got VR. And I feel like this is such a wow moment for architects. I feel like architects that are dealing with VR right now, they're like talking about, oh, it's so cool that now I can use VR to collaborate and talk to my engineer about this beam in VR. I'm like, dude, we've been doing architecture for like a few thousand years, and this is the first time ever we can like prototype on one-to-one scale. Like, forget about meeting your damn engineer
right?
in VR.
That's
okay,
amazing,
like, that's cool.
Right?
Like, but that's like you can... It's like a new era.
Yeah, you can go into and experience what it is that you imagine in your mind, right? You can render it out in 3D and go into it in VR and see the scale and see how, you know, how everything feels, right? Because that's what you talk about. How does the space make you feel, right? And I feel like VR is probably the only way you could really get any feeling from that, because it's hard, right, when looking at plans and blueprints on a flat piece of paper to get those feelings.
Right.
So,
I mean, how many times do people like plan something out? You know, they're like, okay, this is how big my pool is going to be. This is how deep it's going to be. And then they build their pool. And after, you know, using it for 2 weeks, they're like, damn, I should have made this wall three feet longer. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's not until I have the experience that you're able to like really gather all that information that you wish you could have had.
Right.
And for it's insane, but VR actually translates that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's mind blowing.
Yep.
Like, and to your point, no technology ever has ever been able to do it in a way so captivating.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's awesome.
Absolutely.
And there's more. There's another thing actually that is even more wow than that, or I think it is. But I feel like, I don't know, I kind of, actually this is the first time I'm talking publicly about that. And I feel like it's such a profound thing that maybe not that many people are gonna get it, or I am incredibly like high on my horse. but basically I've been designing in VR, and something kind of mind-blowing has started to happen, which I couldn't even see it in the beginning, which is when you make decisions in VR at one-to-one scale, like you start with trying to do a design like while you're in the space and not on paper, you actually design things that look super different. Because after I designed it like starting like that in VR, and then I export that geometry, and then I look at it and like I cut it so I can produce floor plans, because at some point you still have to produce some kind of floor plans because you're not allowed to like submit a 3D model for a building permit.
Right.
you get the floor plans out of this 3D model that you made in VR, like reacting according to how the space feels like. And you look at it and it's like, holy shit, It's like the rooms have shapes and they're in positions that you would have never done if you had started with a drawing.
Wow.
So what people, I think, don't see it, and I see as kind of my life's work, to be honest, is the fact that VR is actually going to change the way real spaces look like, okay? Because in VR, we design different spaces, we make different decisions. So we, if all the architects start to use VR to design in VR, not just visualize, not just collaborate, to actually design in VR from the beginning. You don't forget about the pencil and the sketch. We are actually going to start to build and live inside spaces that look different.
So, damn.
Wow, that's so cool. The future looks pretty cool, I think.
Well, and people always try to guess what the future would look like, right? Like, they're like, you know, a million different movies have been like, hey, here's the world in 2100, here's the world in 2200, you know, and like, here's how all these buildings look. And everybody's like taking a stab at what that might look like. And you're saying that VR will fundamentally be like a primary contributor to shaping what this current time period will look like.
Yes, so basically everything we see outside right now, unless you are in some kind of historical city center in Europe and, you know, things look like Disneyland, has been shaped, for example, by concrete, right? So concrete was invented as a building material at the end of the 1800s, and it completely changed architecture because all of a sudden you have a material that you can kind of shape and has a different kind of logic, and that changed the way cities look, basically. So I think of VR in the same kind of way, not in terms of we have a new construction material, but we have a new process, like thinking process to design. And that's actually even more fundamental. And I absolutely think it's going to change the way cities look. So while everyone is kind of thinking of using design as a tool in architecture, or like, oh, you can see the building and like feel how it is to be in that space, I think the ultimate end of this story is that it's going to change reality.
That is so freaking awesome.
Yeah,
I love it.
So you know, to bring this back to like a little bit more of a gamer's perspective, I wanted to mention that a little while back, when actually after our show, a little game called Half-Life Alyx came out. And before that, you had, correct me if I'm wrong, you had never played anything really like any kind of shooter, correct?
Yes.
And now, so I remember right after that game, you did a really, really cool conference. Oops, hold on a second. I have some sound going on that shouldn't be going on. But you did a really cool little conference online with, I believe it was Kent Bai. And who's the other guy? I can't remember his name exactly.
Yeah, Frederick from Space Popular. He's also an architect that's using VR.
Yes, which was absolutely amazing. And you guys kind of went through and you kind of checked out all the different design choices they made and how things made you feel. And I mean, it was one of the coolest things I had ever seen. Never seen anything like it before. And hopefully there'll be things like that in the future, because it really makes you look at architecture in VR in a completely different way. I never thought about half the things you guys were talking about, you know?
Hold up. Before we go too far down that road.
Yes.
How was Half-Life Alyx?
Yes.
What did you think of it playing from as a non-gamer?
I loved it. I played it twice. It's true. I think Half-Life Alyx is the first game of any kind I've ever finished.
That's so awesome.
Wow.
I don't think I've ever played anything that's like past the first level of Tetris or like Solitaire when I was
seven. Nuts.
I never had any interest in gaming. But I mean, as you guys know, I'm making a game because I'm taking this as a challenge, because I actually have a huge desire to play things in VR, but have a hard time like finding something I really want to play. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, Andrea, then why don't you make the game you want to play?
There you go.
I was totally smitten with Half-Life. It's still not the game I'm making in any respect,
right.
But I was just totally smitten with it, and that kind of online conference Kent organized was just amazing. And Kent has this love for architecture and was very curious to see the way in which architects present an argument. And Frederick and I were like, okay, that's great. So we're just going to use very classical ways in which we typically talk about architectural theory, because every discipline has such a specific way of building and presenting and defending arguments. And we just, what you saw was like basically that applied in full force to VR. And I didn't expect it to be so successful. And I'm super thrilled that it had the resonance that it had, because there's so much discussion going on Twitter and in other places about kind of quote unquote outsiders, so people who don't have a strong background in development, who kind of became developers because of VR, like myself, kind of joining this world, and what is our place there. And I think events like that show that we can definitely like contribute and have an angle that's kind of can be important and useful.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, because I don't think we've ever been put in a situation before in history where a game company could say, hey, you know, maybe we should hire an architect, you know? So this, I feel like we're going to start merging a lot of different types of tech and a lot of different types of work now that would have never had been a thing before. I mean, who would have thought, you know, if you had gone back before VR, I mean, who would go into a video game to really check out the buildings and kind of see what kind of styles they use,
right,
and how to affect moods and things like that. But now, I mean, you know, like you said, to do real architecture, you can actually go really into these spaces and you can see them and feel them in a way that you never could before.
And you really sparked my curiosity when you said that you started seeing stuff that you would have never done. Like, can you give us an example of maybe something that you did in VR that, like, when you translated it, you were like, holy shit, like, I would have never done this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just at the start of this crazy road, and you know, because I didn't, as I said, I totally didn't expect this to happen. I'm starting to collect that kind of stuff and find a way to get it out there. But it's basically like, sometimes there was even like a room that I thought in my head it had a certain shape, because I did it in VR, and we have a way in VR to also have like a bird's eye perspective and see kind of a abstract view of what you did. But sometimes I intentionally do not go into that view. I just stick to being like feeling the perspectival space. And because I don't want to go into the abstract part of my brain, I want to stay into like the embodied, like just feel the space and design it like that. And sometimes the rooms that I think I know what shape I had made them, but then when I export the geometry and I look at it, it's like a different shape. It's like,
wow.
Whoa. And actually there's one thing that I ran into a long time ago when I was an architecture student that is exactly this. And it's kind of funny how things that kind of fascinated you in the past, but you never really understood them, fall black in place when you kind of have found your calling. Sounds cheesy, but I don't know how else to put it. Do you guys know Richard Serra, like the sculptor?
I don't.
So he makes these huge ellipses. They're called torque ellipses. And they're basically the size of a building. And places like MoMA would have a show, and then two ellipses would take an entire floor at MoMA in New York.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And what happens is so it's like they're made out of this very thick steel sheets. And you are supposed to walk along the side of this steel wall that's slightly angled. And you like walk and walk and walk. And after about half a minute, you don't know where you are anymore. And basically, you don't know what just happened. Like, you don't know, like, did I walk in a straight line? Was this a curve? Am I on the other side now? Am I like, you just don't know where you are? And the way Richard Serra explains the concept of this art of his is that he's trying to make people understand the difference between our embodied knowledge and our abstract knowledge. Because if you look at the drawing of these ellipses, they're an ellipse, but they're fundamentally a very simple piece of geometry. So you look at it drawn on a piece of paper, and it's like, okay, it's like kind of like a squeezed circle. Like, I get it. I completely understand what this is. It's very simple line. But then when you experience it, just because of the slight little angle that it has on the vertical, it just like you lose touch with what it is. Like, your rationality goes out the window. You have no idea what just happened to you after taking like 10 walks, like 10 steps along this wall.
It's interesting. So it's all about perspective, dude.
It is. Everything is perspective.
It's like 100% perspective. It's kind of like if your task was to draw a straight line across your wall, and it has to be straight, and you go up to the wall and you put your eye like right up against the pencil and try to draw a straight line across. Before you know it, you'd have like no idea like how close you are to the initial start. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like,
because just,
like,
your perspective is
macro,
too,
micro, like it's all there. It's like, that is pretty mind blowing. And all I need to do is play about 10 seconds of like a 360 Beat Saber level, and I have no idea what direction I'm facing anymore. Yeah. So VR is crazy because once you get in there, all of a sudden you don't know how many steps you've moved or which direction you're facing or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm.
So, Andrea, I have a question for you. I'm not going to show the clips of this level. I thought about it, but I don't want to do any spoilers for Half-Life. So we're only showing trailer footage for anyone that may not have played it yet. But I am going to talk about one of the last levels for a minute. So if you don't want to hear anything about it, please mute for like couple minutes. But one of the things that, you know, I was playing this game, and you know how excited I was.
That was,
I remember,
a great spoiler alert, by the way, just saying.
Oh,
that was like, most people don't do that. I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Well, this game
that.
Is just so epic. I don't want to ruin anything for anyone.
Sorry,
you know,
continue.
It's really amazing. But like, I was playing this game, and you know how excited I was. I think I talked about it a lot in the last episode because it was right about to come out. And so I was going through this game, and I got to like the second to last level. And I'm hoping you remember which level that was I'm talking about, because when I saw it, the first thing besides the "oh my god" was, Andrea is gonna lose her mind when she sees this.
So what was
and I don't know if you remember it exactly, but it was kind of like you were walking down halls, but everything was kind of mirrored and on top of each other, and things were upside down, and furniture was on the ceiling, and things were on, it was just the most mind-bending thing. And I was thinking to myself, like, this could have all gone very wrong trying to design something like this. It could have not felt good at all, but it felt so mind-bending. And I really, my first thought was, I gotta find out what Andrea thinks about this. And I'm hoping you know which level I'm talking about. Yeah?
Yeah. So my contribution to that event about the architecture of Half-Life was actually about that. You probably remember my point, but my point was that the effects that we are seeing there are actually, you can actually find them in certain examples of architecture from the 17th century, the Renaissance.
I remember you showed some pictures and stuff. Yep.
Yeah. So that comes from a certain type of architectural theory that not everyone subscribes to, but that I'm completely fascinated about. It's a certain way of looking at architecture in terms of seeing what's physically there in such a way that your mind actually infers further architecture that is only inferred and seen like with the mind's eye. And there were tricks that architects in the Renaissance did to kind of start to create this extended quote-unquote virtual architecture in your mind. And I go and I visit these places in Italy as often as I can because I totally get a trip when I'm there. And I look at it, and because I was taught how to read it, how to like look at that architecture and see these other layers, it's just amazing. But you have to be taught how to look at it. And I was trying to do that a little bit in that presentation. So if you're curious about what I'm saying, go check it out.
Yeah, definitely go back. If this type of thing interests you, go back, go to, I think it's on Kent's channel, correct? I didn't see it on your YouTube channel, but it's on Kent Bai's YouTube channel. Go check it out. It is just one of the coolest talks I've ever seen.
You know what I'd like to see is a Half-Life Alyx custom map from Andrea.
Ooh, yeah.
It's, you get in there. Like, pull, make something crazy. Yeah. I'm ready. Because it's like the tools are there.
What, have you ever thought about doing that?
No, I'm keeping all my good mapping ideas for my game.
Okay.
Because fair enough. My game, it's a building, of course. The main character in my game, it's a massive building, virtual building.
That sounds unique.
Intriguing. Yeah. I for one am very much looking forward to see what you come up with, because the way you describe how you know, the things that would make you excited in a VR game is, you know, stuff a lot of times I've never even thought of. You know, I mean, being an ex flat screen gamer, all I ever did was want to shoot things. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it's all changing as VR just expands how gaming can be used, and how Unity and Unreal and all of these different platforms that only really were used for gaming before are now just expanded into every realm, almost, in every type of work, and architecture being one of probably one of the coolest ways to implement it.
Dude, and you know what? I got a comment on my recent video about Population One, mm-hmm. where, because I come out swinging, I say VR is about to go mainstream from this, you know, like, mm-hmm. this game's fucking amazing, all this crap. And then I'm like, all right, well, and here we go. Check out me getting one of my first chicken dinners. And somebody in the comments was like, as soon as this guy said chicken dinner, I was out, because I thought maybe this would be like a unique, like, building game, or like something that was like, you know, really trying to like shake the foundation, because it's another battle royale. Like, that's what he was trying to say. Like,
yeah.
It's just another of the same thing. Mm-hmm. So obviously,
but
you're coming at
it. But all games almost are. I mean, the thing with this game is it's a battle royale game that's done extremely well, and it's done in virtual reality, right? So
you're preaching to the choir.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like, kind of to that guy. You know what I mean?
To that guy, he's missing out.
Yeah, because you can't, I mean, just about everything we've seen in VR already has already been done flat. You know what I mean? Except for there's things like in Half-Life Alyx that no one, you know, there's certain mechanics that have not been done, and VR is bringing in those types of mechanics. But we are now going to be kind of coming up on things that maybe have never been done in flat gaming that are exclusive to VR. But I mean, if you know, that guy needs to play this game.
Yes, and that guy just that guy just pissed Skiva off. Play Pop One. It's fucking good. But so that good. Being said, I do see what he was trying to say, and I think that's a little bit of what Andrea is trying to say. A little bit too, you know, and I'm curious what else you can tell us about it. I know you don't want to give away too much, but you know, are you able to tell us any more about your little project?
Yeah, I can definitely try. So I think there's definitely, I'm hoping there's going to be a wave of people like myself that have no interest in flat games. They've never played any flat game. That because I feel like it's the people like us that are gonna really try to find gameplay that is 100% VR. Because the flat screen type of gameplay just does nothing for us. So I need something completely different that I think VR can give me. So whether that's gonna become wildly popular, I actually have no idea. I think there is potential. So I can tell you the name of my game. I don't know if this is gonna be like the name, but it's definitely like kind of the working name. It's called 1381.
Ooh, 1381.
1381, yes. It does mean something very precise that I did not make up. Like, it has a meaning. It's like, but I want
to tell you what it is. Right, it's not like old architecture from the 1300s.
It's actually not connected to, the 1381 is not connected to architecture. So the main character is a building. But the nature of the game, like, I love hard science fiction. Mm-hmm. So the type of story that's gonna be in there is gonna be hard sci-fi. And the number actually has something to do with physics and quantum physics. Ooh. So right now I'm writing the story and I'm kind of deep into like research about everything that's going on right now in quantum physics. So
I just want to say this just became my most anticipated game ever. Go on.
So it's basically it's gonna be the game is gonna be a theory about how what's going on right now in quantum physics is changing how we understand matter. So it's going to start with what almost all VR games and applications are, which is showing us a building. It's a virtual building, but asking us to pretend it's a real building. So it's like, here, it's a representation of physical reality. And then the gameplay is going to push it along so that you go deeper and deeper into more of a quantum physics interpretation. Of reality. So with this building that starts as a representation of a physical building and then it kind of gradually turns into other things.
That sounds so cool already.
And I can also tell you I have two types of gameplay, and one type of gameplay, I got it down. It's like, works, and it's amazing, and I'm super happy with it. The second gameplay, and this is not, it's not like two modes. You're gonna be forced to kind of balance between two drastically different types of gameplays to move forward. Okay. And the second one, I'm really struggling with. I'm also not like intensely working on it right now, because I'm writing the story and we have some like other stuff on the side that we have to finish before we really dive into it. But basically, as soon as the story is finished, more or less, we're gonna go, like the whole team is gonna go into figuring out the second type of gameplay and then just go into prototyping. We already have some prototyping, but like kind of go full steam ahead. It's gonna be like an episode kind of thing. So there's gonna be episode one that's gonna come out, and we're just gonna see the reaction.
Well, you heard it on Between Realities first. There is a awesome game called 1381 coming out at some point that has me very much chomping at the bit, because there's two things that I am super into. It's VR
and quantum physics. Like, right. I am such a physics nerd. I don't know what the deal is. But that sounds amazing. You know, having a building, having a piece of architecture as the center point of a story. I can't picture a VR game, at least, that really does that. I mean, I have games in my head that the environment has really kind of messed with my mind a little bit. You know, things like Transference was a really good game like that. But yeah, I'm excited because there's just so much you can do. I mean, it almost, you know, in my head, it almost sounds like it could make an incredible horror game. I'll tell you that, right? Because it's always some kind of horror, right? When the building is alive or the ship is alive, or you know what I mean. So like that's kind of instantly where my brain goes. But is this going to be? You said it's going to be sci-fi. Is it going to be? Is it going to be scary? Is it going to be like? Yeah.
It's gonna be like psycho thriller kind of.
Dude,
stuff.
The only game she's ever played is Half-Life Alyx, man. She's seen the guys hanging from the ceilings and they're getting pulled up and chomped and head crabs. Like that's all the influence right there.
What happened? What'd you do the first time a head crab jumped at your face?
It was bad. It was really scary. I think the reason why I love VR so much is like it really deeply affects me. Like the first time I put a headset on, I was like, almost like, yeah. So not everyone has this deep reaction, but it doesn't go away. So I think I'm still in love, basically. Like I'm still in the first phase because it's not something that becomes actually less strong, although I've been doing it for so many years now. I could still go into VR and open an empty Unity scene and I just stare at the virtual white cube for like an hour, basically.
Like, hear that, everybody? Virtual reality
think it's
is
a miracle.
Virtual reality is a never-ending honeymoon phase. Like,
yeah, it kind of is.
You can't beat that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just that fucking good.
Yeah. Every time I go into it, I'm still completely wowed. There's some things that, you know, people talk about, you know, feeling the way you first did when you go into VR. To me, that is just about the title. You know what I mean? Like, I felt a sense of presence in Half-Life Alyx that I had never felt before. You know, a completely different sense of presence in The Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners. And, you know, and still different in all the different social apps. And each type of scenario and simulation that we enter into is completely different, but it just sucks me in and makes me even more obsessed with this technology. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you use Adobe Premiere at all, they even have a VR mode where you can go into full VR and edit your videos and edit 360 videos in virtual reality. And it's just changing things all over the place, and it is. Just,
and I wanna get into some deeper stuff here in a minute, but before we do that, that's not the only exclusive that we have from Andrea today. She has also decided to share with us a little bit of footage of something else that she's been working on. Isn't that right, my lady?
Yep. Just
what are we going to see?
Fire it up.
Just to show you how much I love you.
This is the best. We love you so much. So what are we about to see?
We have just finished, literally like 2 days ago, a really cool application that we've been working on. So
who's
just
we,
to
by
give
the way?
A bit of a background, because it sounds like I'm kind of all over the place. I'm an architect doing a game, and now I'm about to show you what I'm about to show you. So I have a small company that does VR development, and we are architects who also code, and we are all super into this issue of VR and architecture, but we also do client work, basically custom work. And that's how we finance our game, by the way. and we because we have this strong interest in one, architecture, and two, games, we try to put those two things into basically anything we get as client work. And in this case, It is a training, VR training app for medical staff. And you're going to see now how we managed to put gaming and lots of architecture into that kind of stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, it's the most beautiful hospital I've ever seen. The lobby, just how it curves, and it's gorgeous. And we are showing some of the footage right now.
So, is there a title for this, or is this just for like a specific client, or is this available for like? Are you trying to make this to like where a lot of people can get their hands on it? Or is there a name of it? Like, what's that?
So, unfortunately, this is only going to be used internally by this client. They are a German medical company. They are in Switzerland.
Okay.
they're in Switzerland, and the application is called SSI, which stands for Surgical Site Infections. And this company is producing things like hand disinfectants and wound disinfectants in various forms that are used in hospitals on patients that are about to go into surgery or they just come out of surgery. Because apparently there's like something like 30% of patients have some kind of infection, and a huge chunk of that could be prevented. So this application is to teach medical staff when and how to use all of these products to prevent surgical site infections that this company is making.
That's cool.
There's product placement all over in all these rooms. But what we did, which was basically not on the brief. So the brief said, look, we just want the player to be able to learn how to use these things, and they had maybe like 6 or 7 things. So we could have done like 2 rooms, and then you kind of have a menu and you kind of jump from one room to the other, basically. And they said, well, just show an icon somewhere that will give the player an idea of whether they are the nurse now or a doctor or what's their role. So basically that was our brief, and we could have done something much more quote-unquote normal and reduced in scope. But because we have this interest and these ambitions, we over-delivered like crazy.
Right.
and we said, what about we designed for you an entire hospital wing, so you don't have to like just boom, boom, 2 little rooms. You can just walk around and teleport this like futuristic looking, but not too crazy, hospital wings with all these rooms, and we could do this, and we could give you 3D characters that talk, and we also have them animated, by the way. We really went out of our way with this. Because we really wanted to make it feel like a simulation and more like you're free to do whatever you want in this hospital. And they looked at us a bit like in a funny way, like we had kind of lost our minds a bit when we told them, and they said, sure.
If you already did it, what are we going to say?
No, this was in the beginning. I mean, this was
this is
the
before
beginning.
You got into like, it. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, look, we have these ideas to make this, you know, bigger and better than what you have in your brief. We just want to do it. Can we do it? And they were like, sure. And then they were like, holy shit, you guys did like a whole game.
Well, it goes a long way. I forget what conference I was at. I mean, whenever I'm like watching the panels and stuff, all of them blend together. I don't know which show I saw which panel at. But I was watching one where they were talking about like medical training applications being used in VR, and how they did an experiment where they would train some people, give some people training in VR, and give other people just like the typical instruction or training that would normally be implemented. And like the numbers were staggering, and I mean, don't quote me on them, but it was like night and day difference. Like 90% could do it by doing VR training, 0 like literally like none or like a tiny sliver. It was like, it blew my mind when I saw the difference that it actually does make.
Well, and you know, with VR, it feels like you're making memories, like real memories sometimes, as opposed to remembering sitting there playing something. You know, you actually kind of remember being in this place you were never at. And when training, that's huge, right? Because you're remembering the information that is normally you would have to read and write over and over again to remember it, but now you feel like you're doing it. And when you do something, you retain the information more, right? And so it's just way, way better for training and for companies. And mm-hmm. you know, once VR is mainstream and more, you know, it's a lot more affordable for companies to be able to train all of their staff this way. I mean, it's just, why wouldn't you? You know, why right. put people in a dangerous situation to train when they don't have to be, when they could just be wearing a headset? Right. And then they retain the information better. So.
Memory is such a strange concept.
Dude. Yeah, it really is.
It's so weird because if you're able to fully manipulate all of your senses, which are like, I guess, what your memories are built up out of, right? I mean, I guess we could be interpreting things outside of sensory perception, but we certainly don't have any kind of way of sharing it or measuring it. Mm-hmm. But regardless, when I remember something, and it's like the other thing about memory, and I think about this sometimes too, and this might be a stoner thought, but it's like when all you are is memory. Like you never experience anything truly in the present. I mean, there's like present moment awareness, which is like meditation and mindfulness and all that. And that's great. You know, that's what I have done Kung Fu for. But in reality, like the only way I can remember seeing, like I have to remember it in order to experience it, right? Like, am I high or what? Do you know what I'm trying to say, Andrea?
Yes. And I think there's this, lots of people are using music, right, to talk about this. Like, so there's I've read this fascinating study a few weeks ago about how you could actually measure the time it takes between notes when you stop hearing the connection between them, and they stop sounding like a melody. They just sound like individual sounds. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what you are. Like, individual memories are like individual notes, but they're like connected together. Mm-hmm. And this chain of memories makes the melody, which is kind of who you are. Is that kind of what you're trying to say?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
You just
that's
hit beautiful. Me right here.
It's poetic.
It is. You just hit me right here. Like, that really is. It's like, I don't know, like all of this stuff is just happening. It's like, there's like nothing that you can do about it. And you're just like feeling, you're just like jumping, it's like you're surfing the wave, you know, you like get on it and you're just like, whoa, this is fun, and let me feel this and let me express that, and it's like all like that, like you're saying, that like connectivity stuff. It's not the note itself, it's the
well, we live in a universe of frequency.
It's the consciousness that perceives the melody in the otherwise chaos, you know, that like finds order within it.
You're the melody that connects the individual memories that would otherwise just be individual happenings.
I like it.
Yep.
I like it. So, last time you were on the show, we had pulled up one of your tweets and kind of used that as a launching point to have you kind of elaborate a little bit on like some of the thoughts that you were trying to express. Because, goddamn, dude, tweets are short.
Yeah, they are.
I try to put a tweet out and I like try to express something, and I realize I have to make all kinds of sacrifices.
Like, I know.
How about we invent a new language that doesn't require so much like longness in order for me to express things beautifully? In any case, we're going to do it again. I dug up one of your tweets that I found particularly interesting, and I thought we could kind of do a deep dive and talk a little bit about what you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. So it might be a little hard to read it because your computer died. And
I know, right?
It's up on the screen though, full screen.
I know, pull it up on that one actually.
Let me see if I can get it over here.
I'll read it off for everybody here. But my Surface died. I even charged it before the show. Well, I thought I was charging it. Ridiculous.
Well, let's why don't you guys
let's take, no, here, this is a good idea. Let's take a second to like this video, because there's no way you're not liking this conversation right now, because I'm having a blast. So like it and subscribe to the channel if you're new here, please. In the description below, we have some links to Andrea's channel.
Yes, and on the monitors right below us here, you can see them real quick, but everything's in the description, every way to find her that mm-hmm. I was able to find. So mm-hmm.
A shout out to Future, who's here, joined us in the chat, formerly known as Ninjo, right?
Yeah, I believe that was.
So if you knew Ninjo and you're wondering where he is, he's Future. And yeah, I just made the connection for you. That took me a long time to do myself. Obscure Nerd is here. Obscure Nerd is awesome, actually. He's a new friend of mine who performs in the Fail to Render comedy show. So he's been doing stuff in alt space and been expressing himself as a stand-up comedian in virtual reality. So you should definitely go to the Failed to Render comedy show and watch Kyle Render and my buddy Obscure Nerd VR in his show there too. Grumpy Duck is here. Danny Hunkley has made it back. He took off. He was like, whatever, I don't have time for this. And he's like, actually, I do have time for this. And he came back. So thanks for coming back. Grumpy Duck, how you doing, man? It's good to see you.
So I'm just scrolling through the pages here. Wait, do we know what date that was? Oh, there it is. There it is.
All right, cool. So,
all right, we got it here. There we go. Oh, crap. Crazy alarm going off.
Shit.
Wow, crazy day.
The show.
There we go.
All right, everybody, listen up. So I've got a tweet that maybe you've already read because we had it on the screen, but it's actually kind of a string of tweets, and it mm-hmm. goes a little something like this. Andrea starts us off and says, I talk a lot about how we perceive about what we perceive as reality is not reality. But such statements are hard to interpret. Is this a spiritual take, metaphysical, scientific, and why does it matter in daily life? Here's a stunning take from Thomas Metzinger. And Thomas Metzinger says, we do not experience reality as the content of a representational process, nor do we represent its components as placeholders of another, externally level of reality. We simply experience it as the world in which we live our lives. And then you take it back and say, so what does this mean or do to us? It blinds us to the actual mechanisms that drive us and generate our human world. It hides complex processes and representation, i.e. what turns reality into reality. Metzinger and others graciously call it transparency. We just can't see it. So we cannot help but to live our lives but we cannot help to live our lives, but what is called for, especially in moments of crisis, are ways to critically disengage and recalibrate. You're a big fan of VR's potential to do this, and as soon as we let go of the need to drag the real world and its rules with us. So I think you were kind of touching on this a little bit when you were talking about the architects who were like impressed with the floor plans. Am I right? Like, is this kind of... You know, you're touching on that a little bit, how like we had this need to drag that into the space and almost emulate our normal reality. But I found this tweet especially interesting because to me, this is like a really like strong, like philosophical thought, you know, like we're sitting here like trying to fucking hammer this out and figure things out. So, you know, when, you know, what did you, when you kind of were thinking about this and putting it together, like, what did you end up kind of walking away with it? You know, like metaphysical, scientific, why does it matter? And maybe you can elaborate a little bit on what I was failing to express when I was reading your tweet.
Yes, I can try. I mean, this is definitely, the heart of this tweet is what I'm probably also gonna spend the rest of my life trying to understand for myself and also to express to others. So I can't promise that I can deliver the ultimate explanation in terms of clarity also, but I'm gonna try. So this again is part of all that philosophy that I grew up reading, that just like architecture had some things that bugged me that were like the elephant in the room, there were similar things that I encountered reading all of this philosophy. And the things that had the most influence on me were this the writings of Merleau-Ponty, and I think we talked about this a bit last time, like this fancy word that's called phenomenology. And basically, I read this guy, and then I started to look at, you know, YouTube videos with all these kind of experiments, like with a fake hand and things like that, you know, you get like a plastic hand that you someone is tapping, and at some point you feel like it's your real hand, and optical illusions and things like that. And if you go down that rabbit hole, you go through an initial phase where you think, okay, this is like optical illusion. It's not really reality. It's like something is being done to me to trick me. But that's, it's just like, it's just trickery. And then I just kept reading and kept reading and kept reading. And I started to like kind of do little experiments with myself. And I got to the point where I started to kind of agree with what these guys were saying, which is that it's not the researcher doing a trick on me with the like plastic hand. It's actually the entire world that's performing this trick on us every second, basically. Mm-hmm. Because we fundamentally don't even understand like proprioception, which is embodiment, and our perception of like where our body is. I mean, I have something that's called sleep amnesia, which is sometimes, usually after I take a nap, I wake up and my body's not awake yet, but my mind is. And my, so the part of my brain that connects my consciousness to proprioception, which is that tells my consciousness where my limbs are, is still sleeping. And I wake up feeling my body basically in this weird position. And one time I woke up and my elbow was going through my head, like literally through my head, like that part of my brain that was supposed to tell me where the actual position of my limb was just totally asleep, like dreaming something, because it was giving me the wrong information. And then I guess the combination of you know, my own brain having this propensity towards stuff like sleep amnesia and my continuous reading of this crazy stuff made me feel like, you know, yeah, maybe like everything is like a trick. And on one hand, you have all of these things with how the brain puts together information that it tells you who you are, and it only gives you very restrictive information, right? Like the brain knows way more about your body and who you are than what you know. There's also the cultural sphere, you know, where we live in a culture that is kind of telling us how things are. It's teaching us how to discover reality in a very precise way. You know, it's teaching us what kind of relationship we have with a cat or a dog. You know, it's not teaching us the cat is a god anymore. So we already grow up, we're born and we grow up into a world with very, very, very well-defined and strict relationships between people, between us and cats, us and trees. It's, we're just taught how to do things. And we need that. Like, we need that for our species. We need that to function as a culture. We need that to feel connected with one another. But there are also negative consequences to being so connected and not being able to take a step back and saying, look, these are just relationships that we're born into, and that culture makes us see things like this. And we're kind of like a boat on riding the waves. We can't stop it. Like, we can't really control it because we're part of it. And this is what Metzinger was calling transparency. Like, we can't see it because we're kind of like in it. And it's controlling us. And what I was going for with the last week and with VR is that sometimes I feel like VR has the power to take us outside all of this, kind of cut the wiring, cut our connection to our body, cut our connection to the way society works, just take us into a completely new place. And I'm not necessarily interested primarily in what that new place is. I'm interested in going there only to be able to come back with a totally new perspective on things. And yeah, that's not making any sense. Like, I'm thinking
100%. I'm picking up entirely what you're laying down right now. And like, okay, for me, the number one thing that did that for me was hallucinogenic experience, which I'm pretty sure I shared with you last time you were on the show. You know, that was like my first opportunity as a human to truly cut that wire, take a step back, and perceive things in a way that I had never done before. And I, you know, came back to reality with some inherent knowledge of that experience. It's really hard, because if you've ever done that shit, when you come back, you're like, whoa, okay, what was that? You know, yeah. And like, you remember.
Everything's different now.
But you don't really, you know, yeah. And I always call it lifting the veil, which is why you say it's like a transparency. For me, the expression I use is lifting the veil. Like, it's all happening all the time, mm-hmm. but hallucinogenic experience, in my experience, was like lifting it. And I've truly felt like I was able to see things in a way that was maybe more authentic than my typical normal sensory perception experience. Mm-hmm. That eventually led me into martial arts practice, where I started practicing kung fu as a way to tap into that kind of practice, you know, and like having a spiritual practice, which is, I guess, the way I would explain what it was. But I have a question for you, because it seems that there are individuals in this world who have the ability to almost take that step back and like look at it from that outside perspective a little bit. And then there's some who I've met who are like so rooted hard in that like sensory perception reality that like we are, you know, bred and born into. And like trying to explain stuff like this is just like, you know, it's like playing against a brick wall. You know what I mean? Like, there's mm-hmm. just nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. And like, there's nothing that I can say that I know of anyway to like help them start to understand it. So the fact that, and we've talked about this, I think the last time you were on the show too, but VR as a tool for that, rather than having to do hallucinogenic drugs that are, you know, risky, illegal, mm-hmm. hard to find, doing kung fu practice, which is extremely taxing on the body, takes a ton of time and effort, maybe isn't exactly fun until you get into it and realize, okay, hey, this is good for me. But VR, boom, you throw a headset on, and like, before you know it, you're cutting that tie and you're able to start to see things differently. And then you take the headset off and you're like, hold on a second. Man, that really felt like I was sitting next to him. What if I am not actually this body? You know, like, it, mm-hmm. like really could maybe, mm-hmm. to your point, I think, help people to transcend a little and to start to understand things differently. Am I understanding?
Yes, completely. And to your point that some people just can't see it, my immediate reaction to that is that, well, you and I are very privileged to have had a certain life experience that got us to where we are today, where we are able to at least talk about it. And I think those other people were just, it somehow grew up in a much more restrictive environment, because I believe everyone is born the same way. It's not like we mm-hmm. were born with some kind of ability to see these things, right. And they were born with no ability to see. I mean, we were all born the same. We just had different kind of early formative experiences, or different kind of liberties, or different kind of circumstances around us, basically. And I absolutely think VR can be huge here. And I see VR playing a role in terms of, you know, the most horrible things that happen in the world, in terms of like war and civil war and things like that, that go much deeper than empathy. Because I feel like empathy is only scratching the surface of what we're actually talking about here. We're not just talking about, well, I'm feeling sorry for the other person that I'm like seeing in VR the way I'm looking at them at a video, but a little bit better and more effective. We're talking about really being placed in a context that allows you to ask the right questions. Because sometimes... Right. When you stay in the context that you're in, the pressure is so big, the waves are so high, and they're going so fast, and you're in a little boat, and you're trying to grab something to gain perspective and see what the heck is, mm-hmm. is going on. and you just have no perspective. You just can't. So you continue in your beliefs and continue in your struggles. So the question is VR such a place that you can put a headset on and you're taken to a place, whatever that is, that gives you that perspective. So you come back and you are still in your little boat, but you feel like you got anchored somewhere and you're right. able to kind of recalibrate your thinking. Because mm-hmm. if you think of what's going on in the US now, not that I want to go into that direction, a lot of people have a hard time re-anchoring themselves into different kind of realities. They're kind of so, you know, seeing one way.
Right.
It is, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you. Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Oh, sorry. I feel like you are right. We are all born with the same capabilities to see things the same ways. I feel like there's a lot of people out there that it's not that they can't, it's that they truly don't want to because they're afraid.
Fear.
It's fear. You know, for me, I think our, you know, our bodies and our brains are our perception filters, and we're not supposed to see outside what they allow us to see. Mm-hmm. You know, and but we are not happy with that. We want to know. We right. want to know the full picture, right? But that's what our bodies and our brains are meant to do. It's meant to filter out the information that we don't want to see, mm-hmm. or that we're not supposed to see, because you know,
maybe it's not conducive to like. Staying
alive. Experience, right. Staying you know, alive like, or the human experience just in general.
Exactly, because like if yeah. you realize that you're nothing and that your human body is relevant and like you right. don't even need to be alive, then
right. because your energy
everything would go away. yeah, the right. human race would die. So it's right. not conducive to be enlightened, because would you really prioritize right. procreating? I don't know. I doubt that.
Right. right.
you know, but as someone who has set sail and come back and fucking anchored back down again, I'm going to tell you right now, life is way better. Like, I truly feel like through the experiences that I've had that it has enhanced my experience of life and reality a hundredfold, and certainly gotten rid of the fear.
Right.
Like it's that cliff analogy that I love. You know, like you said, everyone's afraid. They're all holding on to a cliff thinking they're about to fucking fall to their death. And if they would just let go, they would realize their feet are already on the ground and now they can walk around this beautiful world. And they've just been hanging onto this cliff thinking that they're gonna fucking perish, mm-hmm. you know, or stop mm-hmm. being able to exist anymore. And now what I wanna know, Andrea, is do you think it's inevitable, right? Like, do you think that there's like this wave? Because I didn't, like you said, I didn't ask to be the way I am. I don't think you asked to be the way you are. Do you think it's inevitable that one day everyone will start to like ding, 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 like light up and then like boom, like singularity or like some like huge like topple over time where like we experience an evolution in what it means to be human? Or do you think that could fail? Or do you think that's not inevitable?
I think what's inevitable is a huge change in what it means to be human because of the technology that we're developing. I think that's inevitable. And going back to your earlier point, I don't think, like, we were designed not to be able to have distance. We were, because of survival issues, like we were designed to be human and be embedded in our everyday life. We were designed to look for support and have circles around us and think in a kind of tribal kind of way, you know, we against them. I mean, that's part of our set of survival strategies. And this complete distancing and all of these epiphanies about what it means to be human and to have a body and to live in a culture, these are not things that we were necessarily designed to access easily. And there are always specific people like shamans or priests in a culture that had access to things that somehow mediated this, but those were like well-kept secrets, right? Like. Mm-hmm. All the ancient cultures knew that you couldn't transform everyone into a shaman, because then, you know, there would be no warriors and no one to cook and we would all be right. eaten by wolves. So you can't survive if everyone is a shaman. But what's happening right now is technology is starting to give us access to these deeper things. And technology started as a tool, you know, that I feel like it was, if you look at how technology was designed and used in the early years, it was always meant to be a tool, just help us do something in a better, more efficient way. But this is, I feel like, kind of like a side effect, you know, because the stuff we're talking about is not technology as a tool in a traditional way. It's technology as a tool to help us do some pretty deep, crazy things. And we can't keep them a secret like the shamans kept their stuff a secret and only shared it with, you know, few chosen ones that would become the next shaman. It's like a deeper issue about technology affecting us and changing us beyond just being a tool and helping us be more efficient at the things we're already doing. And are we ready to, I mean, honestly, I feel like we're not even publicly acknowledging this kind of implications of technology. We don't really talk that much about it.
That's why we're so happy you're here right now. Mm-hmm. It's like, because these things, we need to be having these conversations.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you look at the media, you know, how does a tech company raise money? They have their pitch deck. And what's on that pitch deck? Well, is how much faster is someone going to be able to do something they've already been doing, but with my tool, they're going to be 3 times faster, 5 times faster. How much money are they willing to pay for that extra efficiency? I mean, that's just how we market technology. That's how we produce technology, and that's how we consume it. But these other layers are starting to pop up. And it's great that there's some conversation going on right now about all this psychological manipulation social media has been doing with us. But I think that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, wish we had another 90 minutes for that topic, because I would love to hear what you think about all of that stuff.
Yeah, but we should probably...
Yeah, we should start to wrap this up.
Yeah.
But I do want to, I want to say if there is anything, like, there must be something else that we didn't mention before we go that you think is important, or that, that we can make sure that we mention before we start to wrap this up. So is there anything that you came in today with thinking that you maybe wanted an opportunity to talk about, or maybe there's something that we haven't touched on today that we should get into before we go?
I think it's related to this last thought I had about technology and how society still sees it as a tool. I would like people to attempt to look at technology from different angles, because it's not as innocent and as passive as the word tool implies and words such as efficiency imply. It's much stronger. It's like there's another entity among us, and we are determining technology and we are controlling it, but it's also working the other way around. And it's not controlling us, but it's changing us.
It's certainly dictating our behavior.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not like a cutting board, basically. It's changing us in a very fundamental way, even beyond this scandal with big data and all of that. And things are moving so fast that honestly, we can't even really put our finger on it. But we have clients that come to us, you know, sometimes they want applications like the one I showed you, and they really think of this as a tool. You know, I have this budget, here's my brief, I want a better cutting board. And it's not just that, it's much more than that. So as a parting thought, I would love it if people would start to rethink and reframe technology in different kind of terms.
So I want to just take a quick second and address what Paradise Decay in chat has mentioned. He says, Alex, in Between Realities and Andrea, do you think the experience like ayahuasca on Steam are similar to experiences that you and Alex had with hallucinogenics? And I'm gonna say right now too, no, it's not even close. You can't see what we're talking about. It's you feel, you know, there's things you, I mean.
It's outside of sensory perception.
Yeah, yeah, it's, you can't like, it's not all about visuals. Yeah. That has very, very little to do with it. I mean, you're taken to a place, not just with your vision, but with your inner being. You are removed from, you can be removed from this reality with something like DMT or ayahuasca, completely ripped away from your ego, altogether, where you don't even know who you are anymore, but you are then brought to a place with right. what everyone describes is beings that you can communicate with, that will teach you things, that will talk to you. Mm-hmm. It's a really wild, wild thing, but you can't ever get that.
But to what Andrea was saying earlier, you could have a VR experience that would get you asking the right questions,
right.
that would put
right.
you on the path to get right. to where you need to be.
And maybe it did that, because now some people are asking these questions.
Exactly, exactly.
Right, so we need.
So yeah. Listen, we got to go to get to a different reality for us right now.
We got to land this.
Andrea, you are absolutely amazing. You are you are a staple in Between Realities from now on. We are so happy that you have found a home here with us. Thank you for sharing your exclusives and all of your thoughts with us today. You're the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Andrea.
All right, say bye, everybody.
All right, we're gonna send Andrea back to the regular reality.
Bye to your other reality, and we will see you next season. Thank you so very much for being with us.
All right.
And thank you guys in the chat for being with us here today too. There was so many great things you guys were saying, but it was just.
I wanted to do it, but I couldn't do it.
But we love you guys. Limitless Gaming, Martin, Mr. Trinidad, Paradise Decay, Onion Man, Sweaty Nug was there earlier, Danny Hunkley, all you guys, man. We love you guys.
Yeah.
This is our favorite thing to do.
And we will be back next week with Rosie Summers, who is an amazing, amazing tilt brush artist, and she is able to recreate.
I can't hear you guys anymore.
Realities.
No, you can't.
She's able to create realities.
Well, I'm gonna go.
Yeah, it's amazing. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, bye, Andrea. Yeah, she was still there a little bit. We let her go. So, yes, I'm so excited to have Rosie Summers on the show. She's an amazing artist. She's doing like a whole Inktober thing. So we'll be able to show off some of that and talk to her. And we'll see you guys next week.
Yep. All right. See you later, everybody. It was real.
It was.